You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to this podcast on Multi-Cancer Early Detection, or MCED, hosted by Med Learning Group. This podcast is one in a series of five geared toward several specialty practices. In this podcast, Dr. Candace Westgate will discuss the implications of MCED testing within OBGYN practice. My name is Chris, and I'll be the host of today's podcast. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Westgate, who is joining us today. Dr. Westgate is Chief of Staff and Medical Director of the Adventist Health Early All-Around Detection Program, which is a cancer risk assessment and prevention program with Adventist Health in St. Helena, California. Her scope of practice includes gynecological care with an emphasis on preventive health and minimally invasive surgery. She has taken an active role in multi-cancer early detection and has been involved with these methods for several years. So thanks for being with us today, Dr. Westgate.
Thank you, Chris. I'm happy to be here today.
So let's start with some of the gaps in cancer screening, specifically for OBGYN cancers. Why is there a need for better, more comprehensive cancer screening throughout the healthcare industry?
That's a great question, Chris. I first want to start by explaining where we are now and the significant burden that cancer has for us here in America and around the world. So according to 2023 data from the American Cancer Society, about 1.9 million new cancer cases are expected in the United States just this year alone. And this is not including basal and squamous cell cancers. Over 900,000 deaths from cancer is expected in the U.S. this year as well. About 41 in 100 men and about 39 in 100 women in the United States will develop cancer in their lifetime. But there has been advances in cancer survival. So what we know about five-year overall cancer survival back in the 1960s is that there was only about a 39% survival rate for whites and about a 27% five-year survival rate for blacks. However, today, that has improved. And now the five-year survival rates for whites is 69% and for blacks is 64%. So there has been significant improvements in cancer treatment and survival, but there's still a significantly enlarged gap. And why is this? Because currently we only have five cancer screening recommendations. So based on USPSTF recommendations, there's cancer screenings for cervical, colon, breast, lung, and in certain individuals of high risk prostate cancer. These cancer screenings have been very beneficial and have enabled us to catch cancer at a much earlier stage. And in regards to colon cancer, with colonoscopies, we can actually prevent colon cancer. In regards to our cervical cancer screening with our pap smears and interventional leaps, et cetera, we're actually able to prevent cervical cancer. With breast and lung cancer screening, we're able to pick up those cancers at an earlier stage. And these screening guidelines are all based on age-associated risk for our population. There's a significant unmet need in cancer screenings. But if we just took all of the cancer screenings that we have now and optimized this, i.e. every individual, according to their age, got the correct cancer screening for themselves, that would still only account for about 25% of cancer deaths. So even amongst those cancers that we do have cancer screenings for, many people are not receiving their screenings. There are significant barriers for this. For example, it's inconvenient to take a full day off and get a colonoscopy and miss work as a result of that. A lot of these cancer screenings are invasive and uncomfortable for patients. Think of a pap smear or the pain associated with a mammogram. There may be lack of awareness where patients are not aware of guidelines or age-appropriate cancer screenings. There may be fear of radiation exposure or even anesthesia exposure for certain of these cancer screenings. There may be lack of access to care for patients. For example, there isn't a radiology facility or an endoscopy facility close to where they live. And then there may even be oversight by the medical team when their patient presents for their visit, and the cancer screening may not even be recommended or ordered for that patient.
So you've outlined a clear need for identifying cancer earlier. And for our OBGYN audience listeners today, these cancers obviously include ovarian, endometrial, cervical, uterine, just several different types of cancer in women's health. But when we say blood-based cancer screening, which is what we're talking about today, how exactly are we finding these different types of cancers with some of the MCED tests that we have out today?
So for us as OBGYNs, we're actually well-versed in this circulating tumor DNA evaluation. And we've been doing this for many years as part of our non-invasive prenatal testing, where with one blood test, we're able to evaluate not only maternal DNA, but actually fetal DNA to assess for things like trisomy 13, 18, and 15. So this space is actually where these non-invasive cancer tests developed, where a group of women undergoing non-invasive prenatal genetic testing were found to have extremely unusual results, and they couldn't report an appropriate answer for the fetal status. And as these individuals were then further studied, they were then identified that over 98% of these individuals actually had circulating cancer cell within their body, and that's what the NIPT test was picking up. So as OBGYNs, we're actually the founders of this kind of amazing technology when it comes to this multi-cancer early detection. So what this is that we are sampling the blood and assessing for circulating cells that are free, the DNA within them are free, and there are many different things that we can find in the blood of individuals. So there could be point mutations within that DNA, there can be gene rearrangements, there can be copy number alterations, there's epigenetic changes or what we call methylation changes. The blood is extremely rich in regards to information for us to better understand what's going on in that individual's entire body. So when it comes to this methylation biology, it's fascinating and again takes us back to our embryology roots, where these unique patterns of methylation or fingerprints that occur on the cell-free DNA enable us to not only know whether that's a cancer cell DNA or a normal cell DNA, but actually where this tissue of origin is originating from based on these methylation patterns within the free-floating cell-free DNA.
Well, that's actually some really interesting background. I didn't realize that some of the, like these tests that are coming out were kind of rooted in the OBGYN field, which is kind of fortunate for our listeners today. Let's say we have a female patient, say maybe late 50s with a family history of endometrial cancer. Maybe her mother had it, one of her sisters had it, and let's say another relative died of ovarian cancer. They've got some women's health cancers in the family. At this patient's current OBGYN visit, how do you approach the discussion of early cancer detection testing for her? I know it's a difficult topic to discuss, but it would be very important for this patient given her history.
Absolutely, Chris. So this is actually a really exciting case that you are presenting to me, and I'm glad you've brought this up. So the first thing as an OBGYN that we do is first assess our patient's family history. And based on the fact that she has a mom and a sister, both with endometrial cancer, as well as a close relative with ovarian cancer, she actually meets criteria for two tests here. So the first one I want to talk about is the hereditary cancer risk assessment to check for hereditary breast and ovarian cancer, or the BRCA1 and BRCA2. And she also meets criteria for Lynch syndrome testing, right? And all of our OBGYN listeners know exactly what I'm talking about with there. So those are genetic changes that predispose a patient to have a higher risk of developing certain cancers. Now, the second part to this is cancer screening for this individual. Given that she's at much higher risk of developing endometrial cancer and or ovarian cancer based on her family history. As an OBGYN, obviously, we're also going to assess other risk factors like obesity, PCOS, nulliparity, different risk factors that we know already or could be adding to or increasing that patient's risk of endometrial or ovarian cancer, given, you know, the foundation of her family history as well. So hopefully we do genetic testing on the patient and she comes back without a BRCA or a Lynch syndrome mutation. But we still don't have a cancer screening test for endometrial ovarian cancer at this point in time. Now, we know with endometrial cancer, the first sign and symptoms usually of even just hyperplasia would be some abnormal bleeding or abnormal discharge. Whereas for ovarian cancer, we know that patients don't develop signs and symptoms until they're stage 3 or stage 4, and then it's too late. So here would be an amazing opportunity to add to our patients' cancer screening, specifically because they're at such high risk, given their family history, but negative genetic testing per se, for us to then have a discussion with them about some new and additional options for their cancer screening. So things for you to be thinking about as a provider that could maybe prevent your patient from agreeing to a test like this. Maybe, you know, patients wouldn't accept something like this. This is, you know, new technology, right? The other thing is that as a provider, it's going to take you time to introduce a new test as well as explain the test, what it's about, what its limitations are, what it can and can't do. You'd also need to consider how long it would take to run the test and how long getting, you know, it would take to get the test results back, and whether that would play into, you know, needing to get sooner information for that patient, as well as you understanding the results as the provider and explaining the potential results that could come from testing like this for the patients. Then there, of course, because right now there are not many insurances that cover this, there is the cost component and discussion that we would have to have with our patients at this point in time. So when you're considering, and if you're considering implementing this kind of multi-cancer early detection testing into your practice to enhance your cancer screenings for your patients, there are four different A's that I would like you to think about as you're processing this. So the first A is acceptance, next is accessibility, the next one is affordability, and then accountability. So when it comes to acceptance, we want to ensure that we have buy-in from our patients, you know, from caregivers, healthcare providers, and your health organizations. By ordering tests like this, you know, that are new and exciting, but if there isn't the understanding associated with it, then the challenges downstream become greater than if everybody's on the same page and understands, you know, the test. When it comes to accessibility, we want to overcome disparities when it comes to availability based on gender, ethnicity, geography, as well as our socioeconomic status of our patients. And so we have to think carefully to ensure that we're increasing accessibility for patients and not doing the opposite of that. When it comes to affordability, understanding which insurances do and don't cover it, you know, the cost associated with being away from work, as well as the cost associated with any follow-up tests that may be needed. Because remember, these multi-cancer early detection tests are screening tests. And so there is diagnostic workup that will need to be done if a cancer signal of origin is found in the test. And then when it comes to accountability, we want to ensure the accuracy of MCED tests. We want to understand the sensitivity and specificity, positive predictive values and negative predictive values associated with these tests so that you can better interpret the results, but as well as explain these things to your patients. You know, other things to consider would also be the ethical and moral risks associated with this, that the patients understand that it's just a screening test, that there will be follow-up procedures that would be needed. And then also consider your patient's mental health perspective, and is this going to cause them more anxiety or not? The one thing that I have been quite shocked about in my practice as I've been ordering this and counseling patients on this test is that our patients are very well versed in cancer screenings. They are very well versed in going to get a mammogram. They understand, you know, the pap smear component to it. And so when it comes to a cancer screening test, this is not new. When it comes to the way that we're screening with a liquid biopsy, that is new. When it comes to the fact that this test screens one individual for multiple cancers instead of an individual test per cancer, per patient. That's where the amazing ability of this test is, but also where the time we need to take to explain this to our patients. It's a real amazing paradigm shift, and my patients have been extremely excited about this opportunity, that blood test that could potentially screen for multiple cancers at once. Some best practices for implementation on a one-to-one basis as you're having this discussion and offering it to your patients. first off, who is eligible for this test? Who should you consider offering this test to? So the first thing is age. So we know that a 50-year-old has a 13-fold increased risk of getting cancer compared to someone who is less than 50. So even just age base is an associated cancer risk. We know the test is not recommended for those individuals who are pregnant, age 21 or younger, or who are undergoing active cancer treatment. Also remember, it's important to interpret the results as it is just one tool in a set of therapeutic screening options. And really important to remind your patients that this test is used in addition to and not instead of the other guideline-based cancer screening recommendations like mammography and colonoscopy, cervical cancer screenings, PSAs, etc.
So if we return to our patient, let's say the test is administered and it comes back positive for, say, ovarian cancer. Now, you alluded this to a couple times with the need to confirm with diagnostic testing. But in this patient who receives a positive signal, what do you tell her right off the bat? And then what are your next steps?
Very good. So what I usually do is equate this test and put it in an example that my patients would understand. So I bring it back to a screening mammogram. So when I discuss this with the patient, I'd say your multi-cancer early detection blood test has come back with a cancer signal detected. And then I say, now remember how it works with a mammogram. You go and get a screening mammogram, and sometimes it comes back, hey, there's something we want to take a closer look at. We need additional mammographic imaging. We need another ultrasound, maybe a biopsy. So we here with this new test are in the space where there's a cancer signal detected. We need to do additional diagnostic workup to assess whether there is or isn't cancer in your body. Now, obviously, based on the lab that you're using, you will know the positive predictive value of that test. So you can guide your patients so that they can better understand what are the chances as we continue on with the diagnostic evaluation that this will actually turn out to be cancer. So again, back to our mammogram example, a screening mammogram has a positive predictive value of 4%. And most of the tests that are available right now have positive predicted values upwards of 40% with these multi-cancer early detection testing. So counseling for this and explaining to the patient is extremely important because of the increased positive predicted value, but also the difference between this kind of test and similarities compared to the cancer screenings that we already used to. So then I would go on to explain to the patient what the different workup is that we're recommending based on that positive cancer signal of origin. So for that ovarian cancer signal, I would order a transvaginal ultrasound for her as well as a CA125. After that, we could then continue on with additional imaging or referral then to gynecology if any of those initial evaluations came back with any abnormal findings. The other thing I like to do with my patients is show data from the actual lab that we order from to show the sensitivity associated by stage of that specific cancer. So the lab has great data in regards to when they were doing the initial studies and validation of this test in regards to the sensitivity and the testability to pick up that cancer to start with, and what is the sensitivity based on stage. So again, I have a great visual that I pull out to the patients to show them not only the sensitivity, but also that positive predicted value. So there's very specific workups, obviously, based on the individual cancer signals of origin that come up. So let's say the patient had come back with an head and neck cancer signal of origin that came up. There's obviously imaging that can be done as well as an endoscopy. If there's a multiple myeloma, then obviously there's blood work as well as a physical exam and even some imaging that can come from that. So each cancer signal of origin has a very specific path in regards to the workup that is recommended.
So let's finish up with a few concluding remarks. And this has been great, by the way, and very informative. In your opinion, how important is this early cancer detection testing specifically for our OBGYN listeners?
early cancer detection has an enormous public health impact. So today, less than 20% of cancers are detected with the current cancer screenings that we have. So in the next 5 years, if we add an MCED test to our current cancer screenings, then there is the prediction that 75% of cancers will be able to be detected. So there are some interesting modeled data that show the public health effects of multi-cancer early detection. So with early testing, we could intercept 485 cancers per year per 100,000 patients. This would reduce late-stage disease, or stage 3 or stage 4 cancer incidence, by 78% in those cancers that were intercepted with this new technology. This could also reduce 5-year cancer mortality by 39% and be an absolute reduction of about 104 deaths per 100,000 patients. This is a 26% reduction in all cancer deaths. So staggering opportunity for us by adding this multi-cancer early detection test to our current screening regimen. So a few more points that I'd like to bring up in conclusion is that early detection is key in cancer since outcomes and quality of life vary greatly depending on the stage of disease at the time of diagnosis. Evidence-based modalities for cancer screenings remain limited with low adherence. Growing information on the use of cell-free DNA and cell-free DNA for multi-cancer screening has emerged in the last decade. And these tests can detect and intercept extremely faint signals to isolate the type and origin of cancer, with the potential for routine application in primary care. I want to leave us with one more thought as we close this session. As OBGYNs, we go to bed sleeping easily if we're working up a patient for an endometrial cancer. If we're concerned about an ovarian cancer or a high-risk ovarian cancer patient, that's totally different. And the reason why is because we know with endometrial cancer, we're going to get a sign and symptom at a very early stage, even sometimes a precancerous stage, where we're easily able to intervene with a hysterectomy and the patient is cured from their cancer because we can catch it at a stage one. How much more important is that for us as OBGYNs to be at the forefront of leading early cancer detection for our patients when we see on a daily basis firsthand the importance of early detection and what that can mean for survival for our patients and for their entire families. So I hope you guys continue to follow MCEDs and see, because I really do believe that this is going to significantly impact our early cancer detection in the next decade. MCED testing is the new frontier right now in early cancer detection, and there are many companies that are researching this. Currently, there is no test that's FDA approved, but a few have received breakthrough designation for their test. And currently, there's only one test that is commercially available, and it's been out for about the last year and a half, going on 2 years, and that's the Galleri test.
Yeah, and it sounds like there's a huge opportunity, specifically in OBGYN practice, which is great to hear. But thanks very much, Dr. Westgate. This has been an excellent discussion on some of the background of MCED testing and how it's actually getting off the ground as a practical use in the OBGYN clinic. But that's it for now. Once again, thank you, Dr. Westgate, for joining us. And thanks to all of our listeners for joining as well. As a reminder, MedLearning Group offers many types of CME programs across a variety of disease states, including several OBGYN topics. I invite you to explore these on our website, www.medlearninggroup.com. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would also like to give a special thank you to our grant supporter, Grail, who provided unrestricted grants for this educational activity. Thanks very much and have a great day.